This is Focus 580, our morning telephone talk show. My name is Jack Brighton, sitting in for David Inge today. Glad you could listen. During this hour of the program, we'll take your questions about personal computers and Macs, since we might distinguish between the two. We have as our guest Greg Klein. He's a staff writer for the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette. Writes a lot about technology and about computers. You can find a lot of his work in the Monday Circuits section of the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette and throughout the News Gazette on other days of the week. He's a longtime computer user, and we're happy to have him with us to talk in general about what's new, hardware, software, ways to get the most out of using computers, and take your questions about anything else. If you'd like to join us, the number to call around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you hear us around the state of Illinois or Indiana, parts of the other states. Our signal reaches 800-222-9455. Again, around Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL, or elsewhere, 800-222-WILL. Greg Klein, good morning.
Good morning, Jack.
Thanks for being here.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Glad to have you back. I wanted to ask just in general about some of the issues that people encounter when loading software. There's a lot of things we can talk about, but I just recently bought a digital camera. This is a fairly nice Olympus. It's got an analog zoom. They used to call that optical, I guess. Three-power zoom, and, you know, it's a pretty nice machine. But the interesting thing is it came with this software disk, which would enable you to edit the images. And so I installed the software from this disk, and, of course, it doesn't work. And I also just, you know, as a part of this, got a flash card reader because it comes with these nice flash cards that you can just stick the card in this flash card reader and load the images directly into your computer. And the flash card reader came with a software disk, and so I installed that, and of course it doesn't work. But the interesting thing is you don't actually need the software, because as long as you have a USB, you have a USB driver built into the thing, you can just see the card or the camera as an additional disk drive. I guess my question is, why do they include the software when it doesn't work?
Well, I think that's a question that a lot of us have, Jack, and you're certainly not alone. It's in this day and age, and I think this is maybe a bad offshoot of the internet, okay?
Right.
It used to be that sometimes you'd get software that was buggy, to say the least.
Yeah.
But I think it was a lot less usual than it is now. And I think one of the reasons for that is companies know they can shove things out of the door and then fix it later and post a patch on the internet and people can download
right.
and install it. So they're more inclined to do that kind of thing. The other thing I might say is when you buy a device like a digital camera or a flash card reader and they give you software, there's usually a reason they're giving it to you instead of you having to go to the store and buy it in a shrink-wrapped box. And
right.
that's because it's probably a hobbled version, and it may not be that great a version.
Mm-hmm.
But it's amazing the number of things that you buy now and install, and they don't work, or they have bugs. Let's not say they don't completely
yeah.
work. And you have to wait till there's a patch available, or you have to go get the patch right away. It's some things come out and there's a patch available the day they come out.
Yeah,
it's kind of amazing.
It is amazing, and you know, I mentioned this as a sort of an example of stuff that I'm getting used to. But maybe, I mean, I think a lot of people are just encountering, you know, all the wonderful things you can do with personal computers, and then they buy something and they expect it to work, and this is just not that common experience, it seems, in many cases. So it's just, you know, one of the things we ought to be prepared for as computer consumers.
Yes, you can pretty much figure that you're going to encounter things that that don't do what they're advertised to do, and that will take some work still on your part to get them to function correctly, and sometimes they never will. Hopefully that's about to improve, but we'll find out.
Right. Okay. Well, let's talk about what's new in operating systems, because both the Macintosh side and the PC side have what looks like some pretty major improvements in their mm-hmm. operating systems.
Yeah. on the Mac side, it's Mac OS 10. Looks like an X, but that's the Roman numeral 10. And on the Windows side, it's going to be Windows XP, which stands for experience, not the Roman numeral 10. And whatever,
some people
whatever
say extra profit,
stands for.
But, yeah, you know, right.
Well, that could be too. But and what I said earlier, hopefully some of these things will be about to resolve themselves. I think one of the reasons we can hope that is because of these new operating systems. Essentially, what both those companies are doing, Apple and Microsoft, are abandoning this code that's underlying their operating systems for the last 20 years or so that they've kept building on in ways that were never intended and are kind of jerry-rigged. And they're coming out with whole new underpinnings that that should improve the stability on both sides. We're hoping anyway. And the other thing is that it gives people that are developing software and people that are developing hardware to go with these operating systems a newer, cleaner place where they can attach in what they're doing instead of all that old code that's been built on and built on and built on and is really getting creaky. The disadvantages, you know, are if you don't have relatively new hardware, these things are not going to run very well on it. I have been running OS X, Apple's new operating system, since the weekend after it came out in kind of its what I would call second beta form, although they called it a final release, on an older G3. And it runs acceptably, but it is by no means snappy, you know, and you're going to want a fast, pretty modern machine, probably one you bought in the last couple of years. Microsoft flat out says if you didn't buy your computer, from 1999 on, you probably shouldn't even install Windows XP when it comes out, which is supposed to be this fall. A whole lot of your software, Mac and Windows, that you have is not going to work with these new operating systems. You're going to have to replace probably key programs at least, and then start, you know, as you add software, you're going to be buying software that's for these two operating systems. And some of your hardware is not going to function with, and I mean peripheral devices like scanners and printers and digital cameras and all of this. Some of that may have problems. Although if you bought that stuff recently, and it's particularly if it's a USB or a FireWire hookup, you're probably just fine. But you have to take the good, I guess, with the bad. You know, hopefully we're getting a more stable situation with those operating systems that'll improve our experience overall and improve those kind of problems you started out talking about, where you get stuff, you put it in, and it doesn't work. The trade-off is you're going to have to make some changes in your setup, and both of them have kind of new interfaces, you know, so you're going to have to learn how to do tricks in a new way.
We have a call to talk with, and I want to include them in the conversation. Let me just also mention that we're talking with Greg Klein. He is a staff writer for the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette, and he is becoming our resident guru on personal computer use. I just sprung that on you, Greg. Sorry. Any questions relating to using computers, we'll talk about a variety of things. I have a number of questions. I always have tons of questions about the problems I run into. But if you'd like to join us, the number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free anywhere else, 800-222-9455. Let's talk with a listener in Urbana on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hey, good morning. I bought a mini disc player, a Sony mini disc, and I'm trying to download audio from my PC, from the internet, and my USB port doesn't work with this. And I did whenever you plug it into the USB port, the Windows hardware installation came up, and I walked through that, and then it tells me in troubleshooting that I needed to look under Systems Control Panel on Multimedia. Are you following me so far?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And it says that I should either have my sound card there, and I should have the USB there. All I have is the sound card, and then I have use any available device, and neither of those works to get the mini disc player hooked up through the USB port. Now, I can take the mini disc and plug it straight into my headphones and get a download. the headphone jack.
Mm-hmm.
And but I guess it doesn't give me the digital version then. Is that making sense to you?
Yeah, I think so. And I don't know that I can solve your problem.
Have any, don't have any suggestions?
without looking more closely at it. Yeah. So as I understand it, you've got a portable mini disc player,
right,
that you're supposed to be able to download like MP3s,
right,
for example, to,
right,
and do that through USB.
Yeah.
But you plug it in, and the computer doesn't recognize the USB device.
Right.
And Jack started out earlier talking about its digital camera and how it came with software. Did this come with the mini disc player? Did it come with software?
Not software. It came with this little, what was that device called? A little device that you hook up between the USB port and the mini disc player.
So you didn't have to install any software at all?
No. No.
Well, that's interesting. So they expected it to recognize that out of the box without doing anything. What version of Windows are you running?
98.
Is it 98 SE or?
I don't know.
You don't know? Uh-uh. Well, that might be one thing to look into, see if see what version of Windows you're running, because when Microsoft was slower than Apple, for example, in getting on the USB bandwagon, you know, which is the way things are now. I mean, you go to anywhere and just about any device you're going to buy, depending on how fast it needs to be, is going to be a USB device. And that's a good thing, I think. Uh-huh. I think USB is a great thing. You got one standard. You don't have to mess around with a lot of different kinds of ports. It's a lot simpler for people.
I've got two of them on my compact, and I have my printer hooked up to one of them, and it works great.
Yeah, yeah. But if it's a if it's not running Windows 98 SE, that's a little better. That's the second edition, the final edition, really. That's a little better at handling USB devices than original Windows 98 was, because Microsoft was still kind of winding into USB at that point. So you might check that and see, you know, if maybe you need to update to Windows 98 SE to get
that
better USB recognition. But before I do that, before I go messing with my operating system,
uh-huh.
I think that what's the brand?
Sony.
I think I'd go to Sony's website and see in their technical support area whether there's any discussion of this and ways to work your way around it. And the other thing you can do is, do you know Usenet news groups on the internet there? Do you ever look at those?
I don't. I'm not even sure how to do that.
Well, you might go to, you know, the search engine Google, www.google.com.
Uh-huh.
Go there and click on internet, and then you'll see an area for Usenet groups where you can just search those with the search engine.
Uh-huh.
And you might type in the name, you know, of your, type in some keywords about your disc player and see if folks are discussing that out there on those news groups and what they've done to work around.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay.
That's a great suggestion, because chances are if this person encountered that problem, about 100 or 1,000 other people also ran into that.
Yeah, quite frankly, that's the way, you know, I hate to tell my own secrets here or anything, but that's the way I solve a lot of my problems.
Sure.
Is by searching Usenet news groups, because it seems like just about anything is computer-wise. There are a lot of other things that are discussed out there that you don't want to think about, but computer-wise, just about anything is discussed. And you can usually find people that have the problem that you have and that have found solutions for it.
Now, is it possible that Sony has a USB driver for that particular device that would be available on their website?
Well, that's what I would have thought. My first thought to her would be, well, you may need a new driver, an updated driver. But evidently, this was supposed to work out of the box.
Yeah.
Some USB things are, some USB things are supposed, you're supposed to be able to just plug them in and they'll work. Others, you need to install a driver. Evidently, in this case, and I'm not familiar with this device, but evidently in this case, they expected it to work just by plugging it in, mm-hmm, without having to install any software, from what she was saying there.
So maybe if she had Windows 2000 or something, it would just plug in and work, but maybe there's a fix for, you know, the particular
right
version she has.
Right, that might be. you know, since Windows 98, they've had Windows 98 SE, and yeah. they've had Windows ME, which is the current consumer operating version of Windows, and of course Windows 2000, which is the professional version. And all of those have improved their handling of USB devices as they've gone along. As I said, Microsoft, I was just kind of kidding with the Apple thing, but Microsoft was a little slower in getting into the USB world. It wasn't till really like the second edition of Windows 95 that they even started to work it in, and then it's improved with every iteration of the operating system since then.
We have a couple of the callers. Let's go on and talk with our next listener in Champaign on line number 2. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Yeah, thank you. You were talking about the OS 10 for Mac and running acceptably on a G3. I've got an iMac from 98. It's like the second version that came out, not the very first one. And I'm just wondering, I'm running 8.5. Do you think it's really worth upgrading to 10, or am I going to have, you know, like a lot of headaches? Or
Right now, no. that'd be my answer, because essentially what they, you know, Apple last year released what they called the public beta of OS 10, and you could get it for $30, I think it was, and play around with it. And they said, you know, it's not finished, but we want people out there using it and giving us feedback and that kind of thing. And then this spring, they released the final first version, 10.0, of OS 10. But again, you know, they released it with the codicil that there were some things it wouldn't do. It wouldn't burn CDs. It wouldn't burn DVDs. It wouldn't handle, I think, DVD playback. And there were some obvious shortcomings in it. But I think, again, the idea was get it out there, get it in people's hands, get feedback on it, find out what you have to, you know, get fixed. And they're really going to start pushing it this summer. I believe the plan is that when they have their big convention in July, that they'll start loading it on Macs, and that it'll be doing all the things you probably want it to do, although I'm sure there'll be other things that still need to be done with it. And there'll be more software out there that's developed for it. The problem at this point is that, you know, your old software is generally not going to work with OS X in a native fashion. Now, they have provided a fix for that, what I'd call a jerry-rigged temporary fix, in that you can boot up OS 9.1. You have to have OS 9.1, but you can boot up OS 9.1 within OS 10 and run your legacy applications, your 8 and 9 applications, and it works pretty well. In my experimentation with it, it's pretty stable. It's, you know, it's pretty fast for what you're doing. You know, the fact that you're running another operating system within another operating system and then running software on top of that, it does a pretty good job. But it's obviously an interim fix. When OS X really becomes the thing you want to have is when all that software that you like and use and have to have is redone for OS 10, and you can get rid of OS 9 altogether and just start running OS 10 stuff.
How long do you think that might take?
Well, I think that they have to have, and I think they're doing everything to make sure they do have. They'll have a lot of software available this summer when they start to ship it on machines, on the new Macs. And I think by this fall that most of the big things will be there. And then you're probably looking at next year and maybe even the year after before, you know, you got a whole ton of things some of the things that aren't big that won't get ported over right away but eventually will. But you're starting to see a lot of, a lot of stuff done. All of my favorite applications have pretty much been at least started in the transition phase. You know, there's kind of two steps to that. There's one way of making things work in OS X that isn't really OS X native, so it doesn't take advantage of all the features of OS X. And then there's the other way of making it take advantage of all those features, and that takes quite a bit more work. So, but most of the things that I use and rely on have at least gone through that first phase where I can run them in OS X, and they do pretty well. And what speed is your iMac?
It's 23 233.
Yeah, you probably don't want to do it.
Yeah, it almost sounds like I'd be better to wait until I buy a new computer.
Right, and wait until they start putting it in the new computers and then get it in that. So I'm running it on a G3 266. So it's just a shade faster than your iMac there.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, it runs acceptably, but it's by no means zippy.
Mm-hmm.
It's slower than I like it, let's put it that way.
All right, well, thanks.
You bet.
Thanks for the call. I'm just curious. We also have an iMac at home. This is a 233 megahertz. We upgraded from 8.5, OS 8.5 to 9.1, and that seemed to make a huge difference in the stability. I mean, would that be a good – would you suggest, you know, doing that interim step for somebody at this point?
Well, it depends. He said I think he was running 8.5
yeah.
or 8.51, and it depends on how he's doing. You know, if he's having problems and he's having crashes and he's having freezes of the computer, then sure, I'd think about it.
But kind if it's stable, don't mess with it.
Right. That's kind of my that's always been kind of my rule of thumb. If it's stable, if you're running a stable computer and you hear about a big operating system upgrade, don't do it. If you're running a stable computer, unless that operating system upgrade offers you some things that you really want, you know. For example, Apple's OS 8 or 8.1, I think by 8.5 they'd started to support USB. But, you know, but prior to that, at least prior to 8.5, you couldn't use really USB devices without a lot of hassle. So, you know, maybe that's a reason to upgrade. And 9 and 9.1 improved the support for those USB devices. So if you had, you know, some USB device that you were having problems with or you wanted to get one, and it said you needed 9.1, maybe that would be a reason to do it. But generally, I think if you're running a stable system and you don't have a driving reason to upgrade it, then you're better off leaving it alone.
Very good. We're almost at our midpoint with Greg Klein, staff writer for the Champaign-Urbana News-Gazette. Writes a lot about technology and computers, a longtime computer aficionado himself. We're talking about computers and using them and how to make things work. And if you have questions for us, the number around Champaign-Urbana is 333-9455. Toll free anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. We have a listener in Muhammad next on line number 3. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Yes. I have noticed that the processor speeds are up to about 1.7 gigahertz now. My question is there when are they going to start bumping up against physical or technology barriers on those speeds?
I think that's a big question in a lot of people's minds. Mm. But I'll tell you what I think I know about it from, and this is from writing about some of the people who are really doing things related to this at the U of I. There are some professors in the computer science department, the computer electrical engineering department, and others that are really world-renowned experts in this very question.
Yeah.
And what I hear from them is that, you're probably looking at another 10 years.
Wow.
It always seems to keep pushing out because 5 years ago they thought they were going to be running up against what they can do. And what I hear from them is with the current way that they do things, manufacture microchips, is that you're probably looking at another 10 years of pushing the envelope out there before they have to start doing things in different ways to continue that.
Well, that's great.
And believe me, they're already working on ways to continue that once they hit that envelope.
Well, that's great news. Do you have any idea what those speeds are that represent the upper limit of the current methods?
You know, I don't, but I have read things that talk in terms of like 20 gigahertz, for example. You know, right now, we're running at what? You said what we're running at about.
Yeah, I saw an ad.
Yeah, 1.7 gig, I think, is the new.
Right. Whether that's really available today, I'm not sure, but there was.
I think it is. Yeah, and okay. And like a Pentium 4 and that kind of thing.
Okay.
So, it's out there, but that's going to be a while, you know.
Right.
And you don't want to wait to buy a new computer until then if you're thinking about buying a new computer.
No, but it makes me feel good anyway.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. There's this thing called Moore's Law, which says that computers double in speed every 18 months.
Right. And that appears likely to continue, you know, for a while. we're not reaching the end of that. You know, I will say this. This kind of raises that question. He's talked about how fast things are getting, and I don't think it's going to be very long before we're hitting 2 gigahertz and more. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, there are a lot of good – if you want to buy a computer, is a great time to buy a computer, particularly if you want to buy a PC, but also a Mac, because companies are the business is in the doldrums. They're lowering prices. Dell, a big player, is driving a lot of this. And there are some great prices out there. And some of the best prices are not on that 1.7 gigahertz Pentium 4. They're on that 1.3 gigahertz Pentium 3 or that 1.4 gigahertz Athlon that's a step or two down from the top of the line and away from that bleeding edge. But still, one heck of a zippy machine that'll do just about anything you could possibly think of, including at this point still, if you're into games, which are the sad to say or not, depending on how you view games, which are the thing that really pushes a machine. You know, there's nothing other than perhaps digital video now that pushes a machine like games, and those 1.3, 1.4. gigahertz machines are fully adequate with a good video card, are fully adequate for the games that are out there now. And you can get a fantastic deal on it. You can get a loaded machine with one of those things for a lot less money than I ever would have thought possible.
One of the issues that people are faced when they look for a computer, say on the PC side, is Pentium 3 versus Pentium 4. Now, I don't know, but I've been told by people smarter than me at this stuff that Pentium 4 isn't really supported by a lot of software at this point. There's no reason particularly to spend the extra money, especially given the prices of Pentium 3s.
Right. Right now you're buying it for the future, okay, thinking ahead in the future. So I'd say if you were going to buy a machine now and you thought you were going to keep it 5 years, which is a long time. It's not for a lot of people, but in changes in PCs terms, it's a long time to keep a machine, 5 years, when in 6 months the one you buy today will be obsolete,
Right.
But if you were thinking in terms of keeping it 4 or 5 years, it might be a good idea to buy a Pentium 4. And to have that capacity to take advantage of what it can do that it can't do now because, things haven't been optimized for it down the road. But if you're a person who likes to turn over their PCs every couple of years or every 3 years, maybe you want to get in on a good deal on that Pentium 3 or a good deal on the comparable AMD chip because there are good deals out there. And if you're not pushing your machine, if you're not doing anything that really, as I said, if you're not big into games or you're not into digital video or to some extent digital audio, then, you don't really need to worry about that super high end anyway. That if you're just doing regular stuff, if you're on the internet, if you're doing word processing, if you're running your family finances, if you're playing some not super 3D games, but just normal games that don't take that that big a machine to run, you can get a good deal with a Pentium 3 or a comparable AMD chip, and it'll do everything that you want and do it with plenty of dispatch, and you won't be unhappy.
One other issue that people face when looking at buying a computer is the different brands and perhaps qualities. And there are some, you might find a Pentium 3, 1 gigahertz machine for who knows, $800. I think there's some that are really inexpensive now. Or you could spend a couple thousand and get a Dell or something that has a higher value brand name. Mm-hmm. What are the differences between the qualities of these types of computers?
Well, I don't think that generally there's a lot of difference between what is in those machines. Now, some that are really below the others, really priced below the others, may use parts that are not as as nice as the other machines. But generally, you know, your machines that are all in the same price range within a few hundred dollars of each other, they're using generally mostly the same parts. So you're not going to get a whole lot of difference. And I think it's more important to look at what do they do for you if you have problems. You know, what's their warranty like? What's their technical support like? Do they charge you for it? Do you have to do it all solely on the web? Can you call them up? And when you call somebody up, are they helpful? You know, that's what it starts to come down to. Once you start to look at machines in a comparable class, you know, you pick out the features that you want in it. And if you look at half a dozen of them from, and I think it's good to deal with reputable companies, whether it's a national company, a net company or mail order company like Dell, or a local company that puts together, and we have some good ones here, that puts together a machine for you. It's good to deal with somebody who's got a good reputation. But when you look at those in comparison, you're not going to see much difference in price. And the parts are going to be generally the same, not a whole lot of difference. And so it comes down to what are they going to do for you when inevitably, you know, you have problems. Yeah.
Very good. We have a listener waiting. We'll talk with them and also welcome others. If you'd like to join our conversation, we're talking with Greg Klein of the Champaign-Urbana News-Gazette about using computers. And the number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, or toll-free anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. We have a listener in Champaign next on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hello, Greg. I appreciate you being here, and I enjoy reading your column.
Thank you.
I teach in Champaign, and I have some challenges in terms of using the media that I'd like to use and the students would like to use. PowerPoint. In order to load sound clips, I've had some difficulty in doing that, putting that on the PowerPoint presentation. For example, if I have a song lyric that I want to present verse by verse on the PowerPoint, but back it up with the music, how can I, first of all, load it generally, and secondly, how can I break it into pieces so that I can have it verse by verse? Now, you can answer that question. I have two more, or I can give you all three. Am I taking advantage?
Well, no. You're gonna. I'm sorry that I'm gonna have to tell you that I don't know a whole lot about PowerPoint. It's not something I use very often, and I would have to look up the answer to that question.
Well,
or to search out an answer to that question.
I would be happy to either communicate with you later or go to the source that you might recommend, so that I don't take the time now and get the answer.
I'll recommend a source for you. And would you email me your questions?
I'd be happy to.
Because I would. It sounds like something that I wouldn't mind using in the column at all.
Okay.
And I'm at Kline,
K-L-I-N-E. K-L-I-N-E, all lowercase?
Yes. Okay. At news-gazette.com.
Okay.
And sure. I would go to, have you been to Microsoft's searchable knowledge base?
Actually, I have not, so
okay.
I probably should have.
That's support.microsoft.com. And then you'll have to click a link.
Microsoft.com.
Right. Then you'll have to click a link to get, you'll see a link to their searchable knowledge base.
Searchable knowledge base.
And that'll bring you up a web form, you know, a standard search form, just like you see in a lot of search engines.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe you'll have even a pull-down menu there that you can, you know, pick PowerPoint and then type in what your problem is.
Okay.
And it'll come up probably with more than you want to look at, a list of articles in their knowledge base.
Well, good.
That will discuss various aspects of that.
I have tried to operate through their help, and that hasn't been sufficiently helpful to me. Maybe if I knew how to use it better, it would be, but this does sound like a good resource, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, usually the help, you know, is kind of bare bones, the help files on
yes.
the computer, and there are a lot more detailed things in that knowledge base.
Okay.
Those are questions and answers that they've gotten. They've got questions from people, they've answered them, and then they post them in their knowledge base.
Okay, good. Well, should I ask you a slightly different focus question?
Sure.
Burning CDs.
Uh-huh.
Once I make a presentation, I'd like to be able to retain it for future use.
Right.
Burning CDs seems to be the way to go.
Right.
So I'm curious about, for the use on Macintosh G3 or better, hardware and preparatory software. For example, in order to be able to load a clip, I know that I need to, and this I need to ask for the loading a sound clip anyway for the PowerPoint. How is it, what software I've looked for, freeware on the net,
mm-hmm.
and have been stymied by any number of problems, and I'm thinking that it might not be a bad idea just to actually spend some money and get software that will work and will have some technical support.
Right. I'll tell you, I don't know a whole lot about about freeware and shareware CD burners. I'm sure there are some there that are probably workable. And, you know, you might search on the web and do a little research on that. But what I would say is this. Do you want to burn – is it the music that you want to burn or everything?
Yes. I have quite an array of vinyl discs that I could use for class. But I also have some video things that I like to make a clip of,
mm-hmm.
and be able to store that clip in a FileMaker database so that I can call it up by keywords so that I can access it quickly and conveniently. But I'm also looking at using this as the base for the sound clips to be used in PowerPoint. I'm assuming that the same loading software and hardware might be necessary for that, regardless of where I put it after I get it.
So you want to burn music and data, music is data too in a digital form. But and I make the distinction because Apple, you know, has a free piece of software now called iTunes and a CD burner with that that's great for music, but it's not. I don't know that it's so good for full featured or good for data, if it's good at all. And I can't recall whether it even does data.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't believe it does either. But if you want to do both, then, and you don't have a CD burner in the computer you have now, right?
I do not.
Yeah, so you'll probably be buying a USB or a FireWire CD burner, right?
USB at this point.
Yeah, and you're likely to get a version of Toast, which is kind of the standard for burning CDs. With that,
captures what I want to burn.
Pardon me?
Is that the software that captures what I want to burn?
Yeah, it does that, the whole thing. You put it in there and it burns it.
Okay.
You tell it what you want to burn and it burns it.
Okay.
And that'll probably come with the CD burner that you buy.
Okay, now forgive me if I'm asking what you've already answered, but if I want to capture sound,
mm-hmm.
I can't capture that directly from a CD, for example, or from vinyl. I need to capture it, for example, on my desktop. What
right.
is the software that I can use to actually capture it on the desktop and then direct my CD burner or my PowerPoint to take that and load it?
You want to capture it from a CD or from vinyl. Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
With the CD, you'll put it in your CD drive, and your software will see the tracks on there. And it should be just a drag and drop operation. Yeah, and you know you'll have
on,
to go
to the Toast.
Yeah, you'll have to go through the documentation on exactly how to do this. But generally, the way they're working now is, you know, that CD is just a disc, and those tracks are just files.
Right.
And you drag them over and tell it what you want to convert it to, and it does the job. Now, vinyl is another matter because you don't have a vinyl drive in your in your computer.
That'd be something.
So. You know, you're going to have to work with, and this is more complicated than I can figure out without looking into it. You're going to have to look at hooking up a turntable input output to your computer, which is possible to do.
I have heard that might best work on the burner itself. Is that possible?
With the CD burner software?
Yes.
I'm not sure about that.
To go straight from vinyl to the CD burner?
Yeah. You might know more about this audio stuff than I do, Jack.
Well, I think you'd want I not to put myself in the expert role here, but I do an awful lot of that kind of thing. And basically, you want a software package that enables you to record from the vinyl record into your computer onto your hard drive, which would be something like Cool Edit or SoundForge on the Mac side.
For me, please.
I'm sorry?
Could you spell those for me?
Yeah, Cool Edit is just simply COOLEDIT.
Any break?
No.
Okay.
It's actually distributed by Syntrillium, Syntrillium. If you go to Syntrillium.com, you'll find there, you can actually download a trial version of it. And I'm not sure they make it for the Mac, though.
Yes.
But you could do a, if you wanted to, you could easily do a search for sound editing or software for sound editing software. Basically, you need something to record from the vinyl into your hard drive, and
yeah.
then you could take it those files from your hard drive and burn to a CD.
Do you have an email address that I could? I feel a little guilty that I'm kind of dominating the.
That's all right. You can, if you want, you can write to me.
Okay.
My knowledge is somewhat limited by the fact that I'm a radio guy here.
Sure. Well, for some things, you are just a guy.
Okay.
That's right.
Do you mind giving me your address?
Jack B, J-A-C-K-B, at UIUC.edu. And I do all, the internet is my portfolio here as well. So
okay.
We're doing a lot of audio streaming. So I've had to learn a lot about this stuff. But again, I'm not setting myself up as the expert.
I understand, and I appreciate
it. I might make one more suggestion for you. And it's Monday morning, so my brain is not functioning as well as it could be. I'm pretty certain that not too long ago, the magazine Mac Addict, which would be www.macaddict.com, had an article about this very thing, how to get music off of vinyl records and into your computer.
Good.
So you might look that up, and that could be helpful. They have some real good how-to articles in that magazine.
That's wonderful.
All right, I hope it works out for you.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot for the call. We have just about 5 or 6 minutes left with Greg Klein, and our lines are open if you'd like to join us. Any questions about using computers, PCs, or Macs, 333-9455. That's the Champaign Urbana number. Toll-free anywhere else, 800-222-9455. And one thing that we didn't mention on that last call is when you start taking an analog sound source, like a vinyl tape or cassette or anything else, and putting it into your computer, you need a decent sound card. Now, presumably, if it's a Mac, it probably has a pretty decent sound card already built into it.
Right. And on the PC side, yeah, that's something. With a Mac, you should be okay because Macs have always done well, you know, with the sound side being built in. On the PC, then you'd probably need to think about your sound card and whether it's, if it's the Super El Cheapo model sound card, it might not be very good for that. Although I would say generally, I bet you most decent PCs that they pump out the door now have pretty good sound cards because everybody wants to plug speakers and probably a subwoofer.
And gaming is a big thing these
right,
days.
Right. And so generally, I think most people would probably be okay. I was going to say one other thing with reference to changes in your operating system that occurred to me
sure.
after we got off that. And, I said if it's stable and you don't have anything you really want to do, you probably shouldn't mess with it. The other thing is security updates in this day and age, however, too. Particularly if you're hooked up, broadband to the internet and your connection's live all the time, and you leave that computer on, and even if you're just getting email and stuff these days, there can be viruses in it and holes, security holes in the operating system itself. So, that's another thing another point at which you might want to upgrade your operating system if there are a ton of those security fixes out there and they're all wrapped into one. Package, maybe you want to upgrade your operating system instead of downloading all the patches and trying to put all those in, which can cause problems itself.
We have just about 3 minutes left, and this is a big subject, but maybe I'll just breach it, and we can pick this up on another occasion if we need to or want to. A lot of the people can answer a lot of the questions that they have simply by doing a search on the internet. And I wonder if there's something you can say in the brief time remaining about the ways to conduct successful searches, the differences in the search engines, and what people should know about, basically doing a good search.
Well, I moved through my love of search engines like every other month or so. But the current one I like is Google. And actually, it's stuck around for longer than some of the others. Mm-hmm. two reasons. One, it's a great web search engine, I think, on its own. And two, it now owns what used to be Deja Vu, the organization that kept the archive of those news groups out there where people are discussing back and forth various issues. So you can search both things at that one site. And just briefly, what I'll say is I like to start out with a specific problem first. You know, if somebody's got a problem with, you know, DLL32.43, whatever, I'm just making that up, then I'll type that in first and see what I get. You know, I'll start specific and then widen it out. If I'm not finding what I'm looking for, then, you know, I'll get a little less specific and a little less specific after that and a little less specific after that to see if I am able to bring it in. But, you know, if you start out specific and you solve your problem right away, then your time is cut immeasurably by doing that.
Of course, it's kind of fun to just, you know, sometimes when on those rare occasions when I have a lot of time to waste, just to, you know, to see what comes up and mm-hmm. how far afield and how broad this swath of data, you know, that it presents to you is.
One of the things I like about Google is besides a regular search button, it's got a button that says I'm feeling lucky. Okay, and you push this button and it will bring you one site that it thinks is the best to answer the query that you've put in there. And it's pretty amazing to me how often it's right, you know, or how often it does, in fact, provide me with the information that I'm looking for. So,
in the case of Google, are these essentially software agents that are out there searching for things? They have people involved.
I do not remember whether they have whether they use people or a software robot agent, whatever, or both. What I do remember and what I will tell you is that they have something like 8,000 servers now, so it's awful fast. You know, you're not going to get in there and get in a server jam and not get your stuff back. You're going to get your stuff back quick because they just have a gigantic farm of servers to handle what they do, and I think they've got a really big index of what's on the web in there too. That remains pretty current all the time.
Well, I'm sorry to say we're at the end of our time, and there's a whole lot more we could talk about. I always have lots of questions, but we'll save them for another time, and we'll just say our guest has been Greg Klein, staff writer for the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette. You can look for his column on computers in the Monday edition of the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette, the circuits section, and also a lot of interesting articles in there about computers and the way they're changing the world. And also his writing on a wide variety of other topics, often technology, in the rest of the week of the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette. Do you want us to mention your email address if people have questions? Or?
Sure. It's Kline, K-L-I-N-E, at news-gazette.com. And, if you have questions and I can probably address them in the column, then fire away.
Real good. All right, Greg, thanks so much for being here once again.
Thank you, Jack.